This is the Winning Plays Podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the NBA's winningest franchise.
Welcome back to the Winning Plays Podcast. I'm Rich Levine. He is Brian Robb. The Celtics have won 3 of 4. B-Rob, with 6 games left, they're 4 games over 500, tied with Miami for the 6th seed. And a couple big games coming up against the Heat. Is this correct?
This is correct. And I believe Jaylen Brown is expected to be back, according to Danny Ainge, for the first of that head-to-head tilt. The home, not even a home and home, it's just two straight home games against the Heat, which will Celtics, if they can sweep that, they will essentially, I think, wrap up the at least the 6th seed. But they're going to need a lot more help on top of that if they want to get up to that 4 or 5 spot, Rich, it looks like.
Does that seem realistic? So there's one game. We're doing this on Thursday afternoon. There's a game on Friday. Who are we playing on Friday?
That's in Chicago.
In Chicago, Zach
Daniel
Levine.
Daniel Tice and the Chicago Bulls.
Zach LaVine should probably be back for that game.
Yeah, he's playing tonight, so he should be back. So they should – they're still playing. I mean, they're not going to make the playoffs, but they still are playing like they are. So they'll be, I'm sure, going balls to the wall. But they also have – they're playing tonight, so they'll be coming off a back-to-back, which should help the Celtics.
And you said Danny told Toucher and Rich today that he thinks Gian will be back for Sunday.
Yes. So that, which I think is about as good best case scenario as you could from when he was, you know, limping off the floor after that injury, that, you know, he'll get pretty much a week of rest before the 2 most important games left on the calendar for this team in terms of ensuring that they're not going to have to be involved in the play-in tournament.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm trying not to even admit that that's a possibility at that point.
Oh, it's a very real possibility.
It's very real. I understand. I'm just opening up to you and saying, just like for my emotional well-being, I'm just assuming that they're going to crawl out of this little stand. I know. Listen, I don't believe they're going to do it. I'd be crazy to put too much faith in this team with all we've seen so far. But I am choosing to believe that it's going to happen because I just don't want to. I just don't want to live in that reality.
Yeah, just based on their track record this season, I mean, they would have 2 cracks at it, and they would, you know, they'd be hosting probably the depleted Hornets team. But can you imagine if they are in that play-in game, and you know, Gordon comes back, they're playing the Hornets in that 7-8 spot, and Hayward is coming back in time for that matchup. Just the theatrics around that. But we'll save that hypothetical
let's envision back-to-back victories against the Miami Heat.
And I mean, the good news here for the Celtics too, Rich, is that the Knicks' remaining schedule is a bear. They lost to Denver last night, and they played their next 3 games is Clippers, Lakers, Suns, all out on the West Coast. So they could easily, I mean, we don't know if LeBron is back or not, but that could easily be 3 straight losses. So if the Celtics take care of business here, getting up to that 4 or 5 spot is very realistic as well.
It's kind of interesting because you think about the Celtics were in that same spot pretty much, starting off pretty much, you know, one of the 2 toughest stretches of their season on the road on the West Coast with a game in Denver. They go down super big early in that game, Sunday afternoon, I believe. Ended up turning it on with a ridiculous comeback, which has almost been forgotten with the comeback against the Spurs. But an unbelievable comeback. Ended up, I think, going 3-1 on that West Coast trip. And if they'd even gone 2-2 or 1-3, which was totally realistic going into it, you could imagine where they'd be right now. And yeah, and you can say that the Knicks started their trip in Denver, a bit of a wake-up call, got their asses kicked by Jamal Murray-less Nuggets. And if they go 1-3... Okay, yeah, now we're feeling a little bit better.
Right.
And it's totally possible. It's totally possible.
Totally possible. But it all won't matter if the Celtics don't take care of business here. They got 6 games left. If you want to move up, you have to do at least 4-2 and split with the Heat, you know, worst case scenario. And if you get to 5-1, now you're talking about, you know, maybe you're making some real moves up into that 4 or 5 spot. But if you're 3-3 or under that, then your play-in game is very much in play.
And it starts Friday at Chicago. Like you said, they're playing tonight, Thursday. So who knows, maybe if Zach LaVine will play back-to-back coming back from his big break. But you're getting a team that is, you know, on the ropes on the second night of a back-to-back in Chicago. That's a must-win. You got at Cleveland, you got Minnesota. And that's with 2 days off in between
right.
with those games. So those are two games. That's three games right there that you just need to have automatically if we're even having a conversation about avoiding the inevitable, not the inevitable, but what we're all fearing, which is a play-in situation. Or maybe I'm fearing. Maybe you're not as frantic as I am.
I mean, the season could be over before my paternity leave here, technically. We'll see what happens.
I know. Remember we were talking about how Zachary was the good luck charm. I think they ran off that he was born in the middle of their
That was
six game winning streak.
Yeah, six game winning streak. But then the reality has hit both for the Celtics and Zachary.
How was that? You guys are hanging in there?
We're good. We're hanging in. It's just you just have a whole new level of respect for your parents or any other parents out there. And I was talking to one of my other friends the other day, just anyone who ever has like multiples, like twins or whoever in your life, just like you have to, my level of respect for those people has skyrocketed based on what taking care of an infant.
All right. So as we're saying, the Celtics have a little bit of work to do to some very winnable games and the players that are going to help them do it. That's what we're going to talk about right now. We're going to run through the roster 17 through one. That's what we want to do. I mean, we're certainly to those higher double digits, right? I mean, like 17, we go the most, we're just going to rank the Celtics. Is that the easiest way to say it?
We're taking the temperature about everyone on the roster right now, I think is the way we want to phrase it. And we're going to spend a little bit of time on the bottom end of the roster because I think that's the only time that they weren't in the big picture for this team. But beyond that, so let's start here, Rich. Let's go through our 17 through 11 on the roster. I will lead off here, 17 through 11. Taco is still my 17. He's kind of made the case. I don't know if you watched the end of that game last night, but he's making the case to move up to the 15 or 14 here with that up and under move.
That was beautiful.
It's kind of a shame that there is just so much center depth on this roster that he's just never going to get a shot. But I do like the fact that he and Waters are eligible for the playoffs this year. So that will, at least you'll have that aspect of it if he's going to play defense on a goaltending or whatever else at the last second of the game.
Well, if I remember, he did play in the playoffs last year, didn't he?
That's true. You're right. That didn't go well for him last year.
No,
right?
That's where I thought you were going. He was guarding the inbounder on that.
Put him OG. At the rim. Put him at the rim this time, Brad.
Yes, exactly.
Not the inbound.
But for that reason, because you can envision situations, whether it's now or in the playoffs, that Taco can be used as a weapon, maybe not successfully as we saw last year, but like where you can actually dream up a situation where it is beneficial to have Taco fall in the game. He's 15 for me.
Okay. So who's your 17?
My 17 is Carson Edwards. I just can't think of like I said, you can dream up a situation where maybe Taco fills in for one play or what, and helps out the team. I just don't see it with Carson and Tremont Waters was 16 for me, just because he's had some flashes of hope, but equally has just been, it just doesn't seem like someone that you want to count on. Right. Like maybe he can help you and that's why he's 16, but I just don't necessarily trust him right now. I know that he has the ability and the talent to do some damage on this level, but it's just been a little too skittish over the course of the season. So
that's yeah, I'm with you. Those are 16 and 15 for me. Edwards, Waters. Again, Waters, at least, you have those bright spots. Carson. Yeah. I think you just can't envision a scenario where he helps at any point in a meaningful situation. And it's too bad. We'll see if he's still in the NBA next year. I know he's under contract with the Celtics one more year, but it just hasn't, it hasn't clicked from here. And now there's just too many guys that have him on the depth chart. All right. 14,
14, 13, and 12.
14, 13, 12.
I think for me, because they're the same person, Shemi, Grant, and Jabari. Is that some combo for you?
No. So here's my 14, 13, 12. Jabari is 14.
Yeah,
you guys had the Jabari Parker conversation 2 weeks ago. I think that stands here. He's come back to the defensive holes that didn't show in the first game because they were playing the Warriors are like, full on display here. So again, maybe he's a change of pace guy in a playoff game if they just no one can score and Grant's giving you nothing. But I mean, beyond that, it's hard to see him.
Do you envision any Jabari PJ Brown moment for Jabari Parker? is he the best candidate? I'm not saying that he's PJ Brown because he's probably the exact opposite of PJ Brown.
Yeah,
but the crafty veteran that maybe sneaks in and has one big shot.
Yeah, I could see that happening, and then him scoring 6 points in the second quarter, and then not being able to get back on the floor in the second half because he gave 10 on the other end, unfortunately. But hopefully he has that moment, because that'd be fun. He clearly still has some nice scoring chops in the mid post to make it work. 13 is this might be long. I had Cornette at 13.
Okay, he's my 11.
Yeah, so I mean, he is. It's nice to have a stretch big at the bring case of emergency at the bottom of the roster. But again, I just don't. It's hard to envision him getting out there in any sort of meaningful situation, barring injury. But I guess that is pretty realistic with this group of bigs this year that happens.
Yeah, I think if Luke Cornette creeps anywhere into the top 10, that says more about the Celtics,
right,
than it does anything else. Just the state of the team. Like the one stat I found about Cornette that I enjoyed was that the last three times this year that he's played 15 plus minutes in a game. So this is Philly, Lakers, and OKC. He's had 3, 4, and 3 blocks. So not only is he stretching the D, but he's protecting the rim pretty well. But to back up the point I just made, the Celtics are also 1-2 in those games when he plays 15 plus minutes. So
right,
because of course he can do some things, but you have some other options. If you get to him, you're in trouble.
Big Bird, as Danny Ainge likes to call him, apparently.
Very nice.
And you know what? Here's my 12. My 12 right now is Romeo Langford.
Real quick, do you think that Big Bird is because he looks like the Sesame Street character, or because he's a bigger version of Larry Bird?
Ooh, I didn't even make the comparison to Larry Bird. I immediately went to Sesame Street with that reference.
I was just trying to put a good swing. Right. Spin on. I think it's probably Sesame Street.
But yeah, what you Romeo Langford at 12? Thoughts? Is this? Am I too down on him at this point? I just don't. A concussion protocol now. Again, another bad break for a guy that has had about 20 of them in his NBA career so far. And it was
in practice, right?
It was in practice, apparently. Yeah, they have a low-key practice yesterday. Apparently, he banged heads with someone and didn't wake up feeling good on Wednesday. So,
no, I had him one ahead of Cornette. So I had him at number 10, and I just think that, like, his last 11 games, and I understand that this is a guy that you'd think maybe is going to help you more defensively.
Oh, 100%.
But hit 1 3-pointer in his last 11 games. At 6'4", I just think if you're going to really contribute, you just got to be able to do a little bit more than that.
You got to give him something offensively, whether it's the threes or going to the rim of confidence, and we haven't really seen either of that yet. And again, you don't play him. Not a big surprise when you missed half the year. Broken wrists, recovering from surgery, and then you get COVID. This is he'll get his chances, and hopefully they'll come plenty next year. But when you're coming to crunch time playoffs right now, and you have a guy that we'll get to in a bit that's kind of just clearly leapfrogged you in the rotation in a hurry, then I think you're looking at just being another break in case of emergency type guy.
Yeah, 21% for his career from three now for Romeo. Like I said, no one's expecting him to be maybe Nick Neesmith, right? Like we were going to talk about.
But 31% would be nice, though.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think you're being too hard on Romeo. I think ideally he could, I think best case scenario, maybe he has like a tie-ball role, for this team. But I don't know. What can you say? You can't just... Can't stay on the court, can't get into a rhythm. And until further notice, let's assume you can only assume that it's not going to happen and be pleasantly surprised.
Exactly. So, all right. And then my 11 is Shemi. Although you had.
There's like, a 14. 14.
Yeah, 14. Yeah. So there's nothing else to really say about Shemi. We've seen this road before in the playoffs. He might get hot in a playoff game. He'll definitely play against the Bucks if they see him in the first round. That's almost a certainty. But beyond that, who knows?
Yeah, no. And right. You never, every time you want to, you know, throw dirt on Shemi. He emerges and plays like 30 minutes in a game, or like will be like the sixth man off the bench all of a sudden by Brad. So you never know. And like, again, he does sort of, because of how long he's been around, you know, he had, I mean, I'd be interested to look up like how many playoff games he's appeared in his career. I bet you it's a decent amount. He's just been around, and the team has usually been worn down by the time they reach the playoffs, to the point where they're having to rely on him a little bit. So you wouldn't be shocked if it happens again. But you know, similar to the point I was making about Cornette, like if you're in that situation where you're having to lean on Shemi Ojeleye, it's just not a good thing for your team in general.
100%. So that's where you hopefully bring in some more guys with some added upside in that role, assuming that they can stay healthy in this postseason. All right. So now we're getting to the
36 career playoff games.
That's nuts.
For Shemi. Yeah.
That's gotta be the most on the team after like Smart.
Well, I think Marcus, players. I think the Jays probably have more.
That's true.
They've probably been around the same time. Yeah.
That's true. Cause Ojeleye came in the same year as teams. Yeah. So, but in terms of, reserves, he's got to be the top list easily.
Oh, for sure. No, it's crazy.
All right. Number 10, Grant Williams for me. I know he didn't make the cut for the top 10 for you. I'm leaning right now on, again, the 3-point shooting, which has been real this year. It's the only part of this game that has, I think, taken the leap forward that people want. The fouling and just the intangibles that were there in the playoffs, and especially in the bubble last year, like have not translated nearly as well this year for whatever reason. He's been healthy for the most part. It just hasn't, you know, worked for him. He hasn't found the role he wants, but I do think that, you know, if they need a stretch five in some of these games, which they probably are going to, like, he's probably your best option on the roster right now. Like, who are you going to go to, Kim or Cornette? You're probably going to go to Grant, certainly before Cornette most spots.
Yeah, again, maybe it depends on the matchup, but I agree. I mean, that it might be, and this is another commentary on the state of the roster, right? Like, I agree that might be their best option, but also we'll reiterate that when Grant Williams is your best stretch five option, like, you know, you're probably not competing for a title. You're probably not. And again, as we're talking about them fighting for the sixth seed right now, sort of makes sense. I think one stat for me that jumped out with Grant, as you talked about some of the intangibles, is that his assists this season. You know, he's played fewer minutes than Tristan, but their per 36 assists are equal. They're both averaging about two assists per 36. Sometimes I can come down to just the guys you're passing to hitting shots, right? So you don't want to put too much on it. But there's a guy, especially when you talk about his cerebral approach to the game, you would just like to see the passing translate a little bit more in creating hoops for your teammates.
Yeah, and I wonder just how much of that was, you know, the double big at the beginning of the year with him. You know, he really hasn't played much of any stretch five this year, just based on the personnel they have. So the passing hasn't been asked of him. He's been asked to just, you know, stand in the corner and stretch the floor and set screens, and that's it. So, again, we'll see if the right matchup presents itself where that changes. But for now, you're right. That's a real good pick that part of his game, which was a nice plus last year, just has been kind of non-existent so far. All right, who you got in number nine? Or
number nine, I got Knees.
Yeah.
And I think that you might be a little higher on him at the moment. Like, I think you can't argue with what we've seen the last week or so. Like, it's been inspiring. It's been exactly what this team needs. It's exactly what the organization needs. Just seeing another draft pick show some life, as we're talking about Grant and Romeo and like, and guys who are just haven't turned into what Danny Ainge imagined when he drafted them. And you would have put Knees in that conversation even a few weeks ago. But to see this sort of burst of energy and potential is great. Now, is it going to carry over into the playoffs? Is he going to be ready to do it in this postseason? I don't necessarily think so. I'll be pleasantly surprised. That's why he's only 9 for me. But I think I would much rather see Fournier maybe kind of play his be his best self and take most of those minutes. But I can't argue. I mean, it's been wonderful to see him emerge very yep. recently.
And I'm a few at number nine for that. Was tempted to put it. If we're based on the last week, he'd be six or five. But we're not gonna. We're gonna take a big picture view here of where he's at. And yeah, I think him just getting into the conversation for rotation minutes in the playoffs period, I think is a huge deal. And he's clearly there now. From a defensive way, I could see him getting on the floor and hitting a couple threes. I could also see him committing three fouls in 5 minutes and, you know, being glued to the bench for the rest of the series after his first appearance. So, but the fact that his confidence is there, the shot seems to be coming around in a hurry, and he's taking it with confidence. And they're running a couple of plays for him, Rich. And he's the release and everything. It's compact. It's nice when he's got confidence going with it. So, again, this is a nice option to have off the bench where you're not just throwing in a defense only guy at Langford. You can throw a guy that, you know, defenses have to respect on paper in Neesmith.
Yeah. Like you said, like running plays, that's unbelievable. I mean, to think that would be the case, but, and I think Westerholm might've tweeted about this earlier in the week. He finds the spots, he finds the holes. He kind of just gets in the rhythm and finds the little pockets, whether it's in his zone or wherever it is, where he just finds himself open on the foul line. I think that's a pretty natural skill. You know, I mean, maybe you can teach it, but he just seems to come naturally for him. And when you can shoot like he can, and which he's proven, you know, it took him a little bit to get comfortable at this level, but he's proven now that is a serious weapon. And as he finds more ways to get open, and that's the key. Like, you talk about Reggie Miller. We're not comparing him to Reggie Miller, but what great shooters do, it's like you find ways, you get creative, that becomes your craft. How am I going to manipulate this defense to get myself open looks? And he's well on his way to starting to do that more and more.
All right, let's go to number eight. I'm guessing we have the same guy here, Peyton Pritchard.
Yeah, PP.
PP. I mean, this is, again, there's not too much to say about him. I mean, for me, just having a reliable dead-eye three-point shooter coming off the bench is something this team has desperately needed last year. And Neesmith, you know, that shot's coming around now. With Pritchard, it's like, no, it's there, and he's not going to hesitate to take it, no matter where he is on the floor. And so when teams throw junk zone defenses at you, which they have time and time again the last couple of years of the postseason, like, Pritchard is your zone breaker, or zone buster, I should say, at least on paper.
Yeah, no, it's funny. Well, first of all, 30 of his last 61 from three in the last 11 games, but you started the segment on Pritchard saying a reliable, and then you said a reliable 3-point shooter, but I just think reliable, like, that's what he is a very solid eighth man right now, averaging almost 20 minutes a game, but less than one turnover a game. Like, if you look at his turnover line and his box scores for the last 10, 11 games, like, it is scarce. Like, he's not turning the ball over. And we saw, like, maybe it was last month, he might have hit the rookie wall a little bit. There was that stretch where it looked like, okay, maybe we're gonna have to we'll check back in with Pritchard next year. Yeah. Right. it kind of seemed like it was going that way, but he's been rejuvenated. And so when he's hitting the shot like that, where he's a guy who can handle the ball, he's a good passer, you know, he competes on defense. He might be disadvantaged at certain times, but he's always going to compete on defense, just compete in general. He's a solid guy to have. You don't want him. I don't think he's necessarily it's nice that you have Marcus and Kemba. Right. Like,
right.
Pritchard as a third guy in that scenario is pretty solid. I don't think he's above that yet, but in that role, he's very solid. And that's I think he's obviously very comfortable with that. And that's only going to help more moving forward.
It'll never happen, but I can, like, see a game this postseason where the Celtics would be better off. Like Pritchard will be playing well enough to, like, be in the closing five. It won't happen because that just won't, like, neither of those guys are going to be benched in favor of Pritchard at this stage of his career at any point. But, like,
there have been games. I hope that won't be the case. I hope that we've reached a point, and Brad's reached a point, where if a guy really should be playing, once you're in the playoff, if a guy deserves to be out there, I hope that he would be out there. It's not a time for politics.
I mean, I hope you're right. But, I mean, I guess this is the first time Brad will actually have hard options or hard decisions on that front. Hopefully, if everyone's healthy, hopefully.
Yeah.
But we'll see how that, I mean, that we'll see how that plays out as we get closer and into those scenarios. All right. Number seven here.
From PP to.
I have to, we're taking into recent play into account. I want
TT?
This guy's place. No. It's Fournier for me right now. Because you just, I'm adding in the COVID impact right now, and really positive signs from in Orlando. I think he had 20 plus points down there. The shot flow was there, but you know, just hearing him talk about it and how much, you know, the brain fog he's dealing with, and you know, obviously how down he's been in the last couple of weeks. You hope he breaks out of it, in which case he's probably number four on my list if he gets back to the guy they traded for, but. For now, he's someone that, you know, you want to be a big piece off the bench, but you just can't, you don't know how physically he's going to be.
Yeah, it's funny you talk about the physicality. His hit one foul shot in his last six games. And yeah. and he was going to the line 4.7 times a game in Orlando.
Wow.
You know, which is more than Jalen on the season, which is, you know less than a 0.6 less than Tatum on the season. So he was a guy that was part of his game, taking to the hoop and getting to the line. And he's just not doing it right now. We understand why. Like he's been very open about that. And like, we're not here to criticize a guy for playing through COVID, like in post COVID. It's just the way this ridiculous season has gone. But I'm Fournier at six. And the last three games, Fournier 9 for 16 from three.
Right.
That was enough to get him one notch above for me.
No. And so that's, it is the one encouraging part about this team is like the look is that Fournier is still like at least a luxury on paper for this group with the fact that there are so many guys that, you know, when you have everyone fully healthy, that's probably one of the best six men in the playoffs that you can bring off the bench. And so if he gets back to that, then that's going to be a huge thing, you know, huge option for Brad Stevens. And then also a way to, okay, Smart doesn't have it tonight or Kemba just looks slow, whatever. You can go to Fournier and not have any semblance of a big drop off offensively.
Yeah. Well, so when you're talking about important pieces off the bench, are we with him missing last game against Orlando? I haven't seen his status for Friday, but are we back to Rob Williams as a starting center and Tristan Thompson coming off the bench?
I'm going to guess yes. I have Tristan at, where's your Tristan on your list?
Tristan was seven
yeah.
for me.
Tristan six for me. So yeah, I think by default, I think there's certain matchups. I think Tristan gets the start against Embiid just based on Rob's track record. But I think versus anyone else, I think you have to give the Rob offensive upside outweighs, you know, the Tristan, everything else. And so but I don't know, Tristan last, he's had a couple ugly games. Like the OKC game was really rough for him, but by and large, you're getting the good version of Tristan Thompson for the last month plus.
Oh, for sure. I just personally think that version of Tristan Thompson is even better off the bench. Like what's the Celtics record against the Sixers this year? They haven't beat them, right?
Yeah. They got swept.
I can check that out right now. Has Tristan started all three of those games? Like if that's the case, like,
I think Rob started one when Tristan was out, and it went obviously very bad for him.
yeah, the most recent one, Tristan was out, and the Celtics lost. But the first two, which happened in the same week, and I know it wasn't great circumstances and either time. But Tristan, this is interesting. He had 10 fouls, which I guess makes sense, but it wasn't doing much. He was pretty damn good.
No,
so I don't know.
He got cooked too. So
yeah. So what I'm saying is, I don't want to. I hate to get to a situation where you get round one and Rob is. Let's assume if the Celtics advance from round one or advance out of the play-in situation, or get to a point where they're playing the Sixers. You imagine that Rob would have been doing pretty well as a starting center. I'd hate to do all that and then be like, okay, like we think that we need Tristan to beat the Sixers and sort of mix that up and get Rob out of the rhythm as our starting center when it hasn't really worked that well to have TT out there yet this year.
All right. So where's Rob on your list? We'll just cover him right now.
So I wanted to get crazy and put him at three. I guess I'll wimp out and have him at four.
All right, me too.
Yeah, okay.
That's
I want to have him again. If Kemba hadn't had that game last night, that game against Orlando, where he's proved that he's not going to be. I mean, again, it looked like he re-injured himself at least three or four times during that game.
Yeah, that didn't look. No one talked about that, and I was like, every time he went down, he was like, "Wednesday again." I'm like, someone want to talk to him? Or
I think he even grabbed his knee at one point,
right?
And like didn't make it down the other end of the court. But even after that, continued to pretty much light up the G League Magic team. But regardless of, it didn't matter. Like a month or so ago, like it wouldn't matter if he was playing like, I don't know, like Sharon High School. Like he wasn't. He wouldn't have been able to get it done. He was just missing his shots. I have him at three. So I have Marcus at five and Rob at four. Yeah. I just, for the same thing we say, just for whatever reason, the team is just better with Rob out there. I don't know. He's got far and away the team's best offensive rating. He's I think only Taco has a better defensive rating. So you can kind of throw that out and say that Rob has the best defensive rating on the team. When he's out of there, good things happen. He can do things that I mean, never mind. Very few guys in the Celtics roster can do. Very few guys in the league can do. You know, I don't know. That's why he's four for me. It's a pleasure having him back.
Yeah, I mean, it's the offensive upside for Rob is greater than the defensive upside for Tristan, I think is what it comes down to when you're like thinking about matchups there, and particularly with Rob, with the starting five around him, like the opportunities he gets when that group stretches around and him being a rim runner versus like Tristan Thompson stealing, you know, throwing up 10-foot hook shots, and, you know, the pick and roll chemistry of Kemba has never been there all year long. So why would you start that together?
It actually like drains the life out of me too. And Tristan, like you said, Tristan has been better recently, and certainly on defense. But it's like literally like takes away my will to live when I watch him play offense. It's so depressing.
At least he's learned to pass in the last month or two.
Like, yeah, I know you say that, but I still not enough. He needs to learn more. Please,
not Rob level passing, but any kind of passing has helped. But
Rob's a virtuoso. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So that's. But that's, if anything, he overpasses. Smart at five. All I want to say is smart at five. This is, it's something where I think this is, Marcus might be, I don't want to put it in a mean way, but I think he's kind of playing for a Celtics future this postseason.
Really?
And well, from a standpoint of, hey, decisions are going to have to be made, and you haven't had the best season. Not that anyone else has had the best season on this team outside of, you know, the top two, but if Kemba, I think one of Kemba and Smart are probably going to be somewhere else next year. And now and moving one of those guys is a lot easier than moving the other one of those guys. And so for as big of a part of Smart is about this team and, you know, the grit and, you know, how much everyone in the organization top to down loves him. I still think that from a fit standpoint, from a, you know, understanding your role standpoint, this is a very big postseason for him because we saw what happened last postseason and at various times in big games this season in terms of shot selection and just decision-making. And it's been a lot better lately. And you hope if that continues here, then, you know, ride that wave and he could be, you know, a lifer Celtic. But if not, then I wonder if this might be the end of the line if things go haywire.
Well, but I mean, they would obviously, I think, prefer to move Kemba.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Right? I know. It could end up being like a souped up version of Tice and Tristan, right? Where like you pretty much had to move one of them at the deadline. You would have preferred to probably keep Tice, but ultimately that was the one that people were interested in, or I don't know, who knows. One stat for Marcus. The last four Celtics losses, you know, they've won three or four games, as we said. The last four losses, there's something in common those games have.
Does it involve turnovers?
It involves 7+ 3-point attempts.
Yeah.
From Marcus Smart.
The big number here, I think it's like 12. If he shoots under 12 shots in games, the Celtics have a tremendous record, but But when he takes 12 or more field goal attempts in a game, it is like Celtics turn into like a 400 team as a winning percentage. So it's like when you get into the postseason, teams are going to be daring to take that shot time and time again. And so whether he takes a bait, whether Brad Stevens says we're going to roll 48 so they don't, so we don't get punished for that option, I don't know. It's going to be fascinating to watch, but you're right. That's a very big number to keep an eye on as things ramp up here.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think we need to probably go too deep into the final three or the top three. I mean, Kemba, Jalen, and Jason.
Yes. What, what do you expect from Kemba? I mean, Tatum and Brown, I don't know what you have to even spend much, but Kemba, what do you expect from Kemba in this playoffs? He keeps talking about how well he's feeling right now. He's feeling the best of his Celtics career in terms of like physically
despite what we saw in that Orlando game.
Right. The numbers have been, you know, much better, but still not like obviously not nearly the guy he was last year, but you know, he's been a 20 point scorer by and large. And not an efficient one, but a 20 point scorer. So like what do you want to see from Kemba in the postseason? What's like realistic from him, do you feel like?
I mean, hit open shots.
Yeah.
That's the baseline, right? Like you're going to, you know, whether it comes out of other teams trapping Tatum, as we saw last year in the playoffs, once he started really, you know, transcending his former self. And now you're going to have Jalen there too. It's just going to be hard for teams. If those two guys, if the Jays are operating at where they need to, is going to create open looks for Kemba Walker. It's going to create open looks for Evan Fournier. Maybe some for Marcus Smart as well. But if we're talking about Kemba, I think hitting open shots, I think, you know, finding his attacking the rim, you know, just getting to the rim. And that part of that is withstanding some hits. And I think that's where you might, you know, over the long term of the playoffs, if the Celtics go on any sort of real run, that's where the wear and tear on Kemba, especially for a guy who takes as many charges as he does, you know, where that could start to maybe wear. Hoop, get some foul shots, and just continue. He's been facilitating pretty well, you know, before. This is within missing a bunch of the back-to-backs, and then obviously he missed, you know, four games recently. But you know, you're looking at his assists there, 6-8. It's not that if those numbers, your offense, very good plays.
I never said a few on the assists. I think that's like if he embraces just that finding his guys and not, you know, sometimes when he gets it going, like take those shots, but if not, attack the rim, work on the kickouts, work on the pick and roll with Rob, like get everyone else going. That I think will let this team be the best version of itself come 2 weeks. But that's, if he can do that consistently, yeah, that's going to be the difference.
Defensively, right. You try to steal positions on with the charges. And then when it comes to winning time, he is going to be, you know, the focus of the other team's offense. Like, how do we get Kemba in a mismatch? And the Celtics are going to have their hands full dealing with that. But again, if he is cashing in on offense, whether it's through assists or scoring, you can live with the defensive liability a little bit more. But still, it's going to be an issue.
Yeah. All right. Any final words on JT or JB, or should we?
No, I mean, right there. I mean, we're glad. Can I admit something? I did not and probably will never watch that collision between them at the end of the Portland. I can't tell you the last time that I've been watching a Celtics game and been compelled just to shut it off because I'm just so frustrated with what's going on. But the thing when Marcus got tossed, and then when they caught Nurkic just kind of grinning on the sidelines afterwards, and then there was one more call after that just put me over the top. I literally just closed my computer and walked outside, and I think just shot hoops in my backyard for a few minutes to calm down. And then I checked Twitter shortly afterwards, and I see everyone freaking out about this collision between Jalen and Jason. And I was certainly not in a place right then and there to rewatch it. And now that it seems that they've avoided catastrophe, right? Where we were thinking that Tatum was back against Orlando and looked pretty great. Like he was pretty much just toying with the Magic. And it seems like Jaylen will be back for when it matters against Miami. I'm never going to watch it. It's never going to exist for me.
It's a smart decision. Lillard almost went down too. So that almost ended a two-team season.
Oh, wow.
In one place. So that's, everyone's happy that that was not the case, but yeah, nothing to see there. Don't tempt fate.
Yeah, we're back in the bubble. Celtics, the future of the Celtics season depends on winning a few games against the Miami Heat.
There you go.
Again, like you said, they got to take care of business beyond that, but those other games seem, like, if they can't win those games, what are we even talking about?
Right, exactly.
Cancel the podcast. But but yeah, no, you got to beat Miami. And for the first time, they might have, if Jaylen is back, I think that means everybody's back. Maybe not Romeo, but like, as we said, he's on the outside of the top 10 right now. So it's a good time to get the band back together.
It should be fun. Should be a nice sneak preview for more intense games to come in the coming weeks. So that's it for us. We'll be back next week to break down those matchups and see where this team is headed as the postseason approaches. Follow us on Twitter at Winning Plays Pod. Follow Rich at Rich_Levine. And we will follow me at Brian T. Robb. And we will talk to you guys with some playoff primers coming next week.